Hey there, Goblin here. I just wanted to give you a heads up that until recently, I've been uploading exclusively on YouTube. So head over there and check out my channel if you're interested in more content, as there are additional videos that don't get uploaded here as podcasts. Thanks for tuning in. Now, let's get started. Good evening, everyone, and welcome. I'm Goblin Queen, and I'm in the mood for some high strangeness. Who doesn't love high strangeness? The weirder, the better, right? High strangeness is a term used to describe an event that is more unusual than a typical paranormal experience. Although Fortean phenomena are strange to begin with, there are reports and claims that are so bizarre they must be placed in a special category. What I just read is a quote from Files from the Edge, A Paranormal Investigator's Explorations into High Strangeness by Philip J. Imbrongo, and it's a pretty good summary of what high strangeness is. I'm sure most of you listening will be familiar with the concept, but if you aren't, basically, high strangeness is a term originated by J. Allen Hynek to describe paranormal reports that contain details that are super weird. If you need examples, keep listening, because I'll be going over several stories that demonstrate the delicious, unexplainable intrigue of high strangeness. Let's get started. This first story was actually suggested to me by a couple people in the comments. In one case, I asked for any suggestions people had, and this was one of them, and then later in another video, someone asked about it, so. And I am always open to suggestions and input for topics. I can't guarantee that I will get to them or get to them, you know, immediately, but I'm definitely always open to input and suggestions. So I was not very familiar with this story. I had heard it briefly a long time ago on a podcast, and I remember it being really weird and interesting, but I never looked into it further and kind of forgot about it until it was suggested. So I decided to start researching it and read the story, the report, and I definitely understand now where the intrigue and fascination comes from, because this is such a wild account. So, definitely a good suggestion. Thank you to those who did suggest it. And what story am I talking about? I'm talking about the Sandown Clown, or sometimes it's called Sam the Sandown Clown. Oh, and just a heads up, I am going to spend a long time talking about this, so if you feel you are super familiar with the subject and you want to skip ahead, I will put a timestamp so that you can click forward to the next story either in the description of the video or if you just scroll along the time bar at the bottom of the video. So this story took place in the UK on the Isle of Wight in 1973. It was reported to Bufora, or the British UFO Organization, and it was published in their public journal in the January/February 1978 issue. The report was written up by Norman Oliver, who was told the strange tale by the father of the witness, who was known as Mr. Y. His daughter was given a pseudonym, which is Faye, and she was 7 years old in May of 1973, at the time that she had her bizarre experience. So what I'm going to do is just read this report. Read the original report that was published in Bufora in 1978. That's kind of the only source, and it's the original source for the story. So that's what I think is best to do. So I'm going to read that for you now. Faye, or so we shall call her, was near Lake Common Sandown on a Tuesday afternoon about 4 o'clock, with a boy about her own age, when they both heard a weird wailing noise, not unlike an ambulance siren. They followed it across the golf links and through a hedge leading to a swampy meadow adjacent to little-used Sandown Airport. The noise ceased. As they were crossing a wooden footbridge over a narrow brook, a blue-gloved hand appeared from under the bridge, and a strange figure emerged. The figure fumbled with a book, dropped it in the water, then splashed about to retrieve it. The two then watched the figure enter a metallic hut, similar to those used on building sites, except that it had no windows. It moved along with a strange hopping motion, with knees raised high. The children wandered off and were over 50 yards, or 150 feet, away, when the figure, which from now on will be referred to as He, reappeared, carrying a black-knobbed microphone with a white flex attached. The wailing noise immediately returned, this time being so loud that the boy was scared and began to run away. The noise ceased, and He spoke into the microphone, and although so far off, the children could hear his voice as clearly as though he were right near them. "Hello, are you still there?" he asked, and in response to what sounded a friendly tone, they ventured close enough to speak to the oddly attired person. He was nearly 7 feet tall and had no neck, for his head appeared to be wedged straight onto his shoulders. He wore a yellow pointed hat, which interlocked with the red collar of a green tunic. A round black knob was affixed to the top of his hat, and wooden antennae were attached on either side. The face had triangular markings for eyes, a brown square of a nose, and motionless yellow lips. Other round markings were on his paper-white cheeks, and a fringe of red hair fell onto his forehead. Wooden slats protruded from his sleeves and from below his white trousers. His first communication was in writing. He wrote in a notebook in a large hand, "Hello, and I am all colors, Sam." The boy was hesitant, but Faye read each word as it was pointed to. This was necessary, as the words were not laid out in conventional sequence. The children ventured closer and discovered that the creature could talk without the aid of a microphone, though his lips did not move, and speech was unclear, rather like that of a person who does not open his mouth properly. He asked the children about themselves, so they ventured to ask questions too. They asked about his clothes, which were all ripped, and he told them he only had one set, so he could only wear those. Because of his strange white features, they asked if he was really a man. The answer was a chuckled, "No." They also asked if he was a ghost. The vague reply was, "Well, not really, but I am, in an odd sort of way." "What are you, then?" they continued, but only obtained the answer, "You know," with no further explanation. He also said he had no name. There were others like himself, though, and he drew a rough sketch of one of them. He also confided that he was frightened of people and scared they might hurt him. Apparently, if attacked, he would not fight back. At his invitation, the children crawled through a flap into his hut, which contained two levels. The lower had plenty of headroom and was wallpapered in blue-green and covered with a pattern of dials. It also had an electric heater and simple wooden furniture. The upper level was less spacious, and the floor was metallic. He told the children that he fed upon berries, which he collected in the late afternoon. He didn't say where, but did indicate that he had a camp on the mainland he could go to. He also said that the water from the river could be drunk once he had cleaned it. Once inside the hut, he removed his hat to reveal round white ears and sparse brown hair. Before eating a berry, he performed an odd conjuring trick. He placed the berry in his ear, thrust his head forward, and caused the berry to disappear and reappear at one of his odd eyes. Repeating the process, the berry traveled to his mouth. The children talked to this strange being for half an hour or more. Then, after saying goodbye, they rushed across the golf links to tell the first man they met that they'd seen a ghost. He merely laughed, but the children were convinced of their experience and that the being was either a ghost or someone dressed up. Faye told her father of her experience some 3 weeks later, on June 2, 1973. At first, he found the story quite unbelievable, but was amazed at the detailed account and Faye's certainty as to its truth. She was quite upset when he suggested she'd made it up or invented it. Mr. Y saw the boy, but found him not easy to communicate with, though he did get a statement from him verifying that he'd seen it too. Apart from make-believe, other possibilities considered included a shared hallucination and a deliberate hoax by someone. There was such an extraordinary amount of detail, however, which included the further point that the creature clearly had only 3 fingers on each blue-gloved hand and 3 toes on his bare white feet, making a deliberate hoax somewhat difficult. And, indeed, why go to all that trouble? Mr. Y said, I get the impression that Faye was somehow taken into a bubble of alien reality created by this strange personage. He told them he had just made the hut. Also, Faye told me that while they were talking to this ghost, two workmen nearby were preparing a post. They paid no attention as though they could not see it. Well, ghost, spaceman, imagination, hoax, or hallucination? Take your pick. Just a child's make-believe? Perhaps. But there are a number of unusual elements in the story, and it is very detailed. Remember, too, that quite a percentage of reports of sightings come from children. One last point. Mr. Y visited the spot, but could find no metal hut anywhere in sight, nor any indication of one. Not really surprising, no matter in what light one views the children's story, for, to make a comparison, how often are traces found in reported UFO landings? The case rests. Wow. Like I said, I can definitely see where the intrigue comes from with this story. It is so odd. The details of his appearance, the behavior, their movements, the way their mouth doesn't move when they speak, the things they communicate. It's a remarkable story. One of the critiques of this story is that it was told by a child, which already makes it hard for people to believe, unfortunately. And while it was experienced by two people, it was only really detailed by Faye, and the other boy who was with her didn't want to talk about it, besides confirming that it happened. And, I mean, if it happened as Faye says it did, I can easily imagine him being scared out of his wits and not wanting to talk about it. Also, it's so strange, he'd probably think people wouldn't believe him anyway. I also think it's interesting that she didn't tell her dad about the experience until a couple weeks later. If it was a story that she was just making up on the spot for fun, why wouldn't she tell her dad right away? I think that is interesting, too, that she seemed to wait a couple weeks before telling him the story. So, this is a great example of high strangeness, right? These really weird, specific details. So people also find these high strangeness details to be hard to believe, which is understandable, and makes them think that it's all just an odd, imaginative story told by a child. But, on the other hand, that's also an argument in favor of the legitimacy of some high strangeness accounts, that the odd claims are just too odd and too specific to make up. Like, some of these stories, such as this one, the Sandown Clown, are so odd. Like, how do you think of these? You know, it seems to almost defy imagination sometimes when they're so strange and there's so many weird details. So that can actually add legitimacy. And for me, I think it does, personally. So a lot of people have taken to calling this entity Sam. Sam the Sandown Clown. Which I suppose comes from his written message that he visually dictated as saying, "Hello, and I am all colors, comma, Sam." The structure of it suggests that he could be introducing himself as Sam, but he later says he has no name. It could also sound like he was referring to someone he was speaking to as Sam. Hello, comma, Sam. If this was one of the children's names, if either of the children were named Sam, I think they would have said so in the report. And they could have still protected anonymity. By changing the name that the clown said, but that would have just been too strange if he had known one of the children's names. I don't think they would have left that out. I think they would have mentioned that that was the case if the clown, the entity, had just known one of their names. So, the meaning of this cryptic written message remains a mystery. There is something very endearing to me about the Sandown Clown, whatever they are. He seems very friendly and sweet to the children, and even admits that he's afraid of humans and afraid that they might hurt him. And if someone did try to attack him, he wouldn't even fight them back. He just hangs out by his metal hut and collects berries. I'll admit, the way that he eats berries is a little freaky, but I don't know. He seems like a fun, sweet little guy, just hopping around. But as to what the Sandown Clown actually was, is up for debate, and most likely forever will be, so we can only speculate. The children identified it as a ghost, even though it doesn't match any description of what most people would generally think of as a ghost. I imagine that's just the only language or terminology the children had to work with. And of course, it could be considered under several different supernatural subcategories. The children also considered that it could be someone dressed up. And I saw other people present this theory on a discussion board, I think on the Fortiana forums. It is possible, and while we love our hermits and eccentrics, the details given describe some very strange characteristics that to me it would be hard to imagine that no one else in the locality had taken notice of such an odd person. Some people give a folie à deux as an explanation, which is basically a shared psychosis or a twin madness. Since the Sandown clown invited the children to his home, some rationalized that what actually took place was some sort of predatory abduction and sexual abuse that the children mentally dealt with by psychologically masking the experience with the high strangeness details that they reported. Honestly, I'm not really qualified to make assessments on that theory. I have no idea what the likelihood of children reacting to that type of traumatic experience in this particular way is, or how shared hallucinations manifest. I'm not a child psychologist, so I don't really know, but I suppose it could be a possibility. I don't really know what's more likely, a bizarre tale made up as a result of an abusive experience, or an interaction with a supernatural entity. Obviously, this was reported by a UFO journal, so that's one interpretive avenue one could take. Many details certainly ring true with high strangeness reports, and indeed, ufology is where the concept of high strangeness originates. His metal hut could be a spaceship or a craft. His odd attire, appearance, behavior, and use of technology could be indications of an extraterrestrial entity. And speaking of UFOs, it's important to note that Faye's father, Mr. Y, had his own odd experiences prior to Faye's meeting of the Sandown Clown. These are also in the Before report, so I'll read those for you now. Tuesday, October 20th, 1970. Around 7 p.m., Mr. Y was driving from Shanklin to Ryde via Seaview to see a friend. He turned right to St. Helens and then became aware of a large multi-lit aircraft to his right, about halfway between the road and Bembridge Downs. It looked enormous as it flew low over swampy terrain. He stopped the car and watched. The object hovered apparently aimlessly over the swampy margins of the river. A wide ring of seven or more lights could be seen, each of them a large and clearly defined sphere, like a bright red cherry, and interspersed with a turquoise and a white light. No sound could be heard. Our witness drove on, and the object flew parallel. Once outside St. Helens, it cut across about 300 yards behind him and dropped slowly, meandering above distant hedges, now appearing smaller with the number of red lights reduced to four, which seemed to rotate slowly. Mr. Y again stopped, and this time used his torch to signal for some 10 minutes, during which time the object weaved backwards and forwards without settling. He then continued on to his appointment. When he reached his destination, the red lights were still there, and he left his own rear lights on to face the object. Coming out of the house, his friend could see the thing also, playing hide-and-seek between the treetops. As he continued on to ride, the lights were lost to view, and our witness saw them no more. On several subsequent occasions, he noticed single balls of red light in the sky, which would hang stationary or follow him along as though checking his movements. But on the 1st of March 1972, a considerably more frightening incident occurred. It was between 9 p.m. and 10 p.m., and Mr. Y was perched on the cliffside at Compton Bay, having been driven there by an unexpected tidal surge seemingly caused, in part at least, by some form of droning underwater craft. From his vantage point, he observed two points of light, which were yellow, and, quote, "peering up at me like the eyes of some horrible sea monster." End quote. He guessed the eyes were not much more than 40 feet away and were just below the surface of the sea, like a sort of periscope. They disappeared, and as the tide gradually subsided, Mr. Y was able to get back to his car and drive home. At no time did he tell his young daughter of anything he had experienced, but at the beginning of May 1973, when she was 7 years old, she claimed to have had a very weird encounter indeed. Mr. Y tells me that although bizarre, certain elements of the story rang true to him, and he also took account of the possibility of some connection with his own previous experiences. So, he believes that there may be a connection between his daughter's encounter and the experiences he had in the several years leading up to hers. It's not uncommon at all for there to be a sort of family history when it comes to paranormal experiences. And it's true, as was said in Bufora, that many paranormal reports come from children, and lots of people can find lots of reasons to explain that away. While not all reports can be genuine, a percentage of them are certainly either misinterpreted phenomenon, and at least a few are probably just straight up fabrications. Many adults grow up to maintain belief in their supernatural encounters experienced in childhood. I'm sure some of you listening are among them, and I, you know, fall into that camp myself. I had experiences that I can't explain or what I believe to be paranormal experiences in childhood. Honestly, I don't know what really happened to Faye and her friend, but I really liked that story. The bizarre details are so intriguing. It just really tickles your boggle threshold, doesn't it? So, thank you again to those who suggested me including this story in a video. I really enjoyed looking into that, and I'm glad I know about that now. But it is now time we will finally part ways with the Sandown Clown and read some other accounts of high strangeness. This next one I found on Your Ghost Stories, and it was submitted by Bettina Marie. It took place in Idaho, and it's called Weird as Heck Visitation. Back in the day, my two oldest brothers and I rented a flat in Boise that was the top floor of an older house above the neighbor named Laney. The house was connected to a mineral spring for hot water and heat. It was usually hot enough on our floor that the windows were all fogged, since Laney set the temperature on the radiators from her place on the ground floor. We had a few strange things happen at that address, but the weirdest couldn't be explained as ghosts. So far, it has not been explained at all. For a time, I was seeing a fella named Mikkel. He was a solid, kind soul, very practical, and not given to boasting or exaggeration. Even before we took up, he had been to our place often enough, as he was friends with my brothers. Which is to say, my brothers had no objections to me dating him. One spring night, pretty late, we lay down very conventionally to sleep, with my head sideways on his right arm, and him lying on his back, in a queen bed on a box spring on the floor. Past the foot of the bed, the door to my room and all the windows were shut, as it was still very cold outside. As usual, though, it was muggy and hot from the radiators we couldn't turn down. As I was drifting off, I heard a sort of noise like in the movies when a sword comes out of a scabbard, and felt a very cold draft. Without opening my eyes, I could see, shining at the foot of my bed, two figures, sort of outlined, but in different types of light. To make this vanish, I lifted my head and opened my eyes, but there in the goldish-green light at the foot of my bed was an adult-sized figure in a cloak, with a headband, holding a staff or something to his shoulder, sort of leaning towards a smaller figure outlined in blue light. This one's face was scrunched and wrinkled, and he stood hunched but long-limbed, like a fairy-tale dwarf or gnome, just a half foot or so taller than the bed. Although my brain was rebelling, my eyes saw this as plain as day. It, the dwarf-sized thing, was staring straight at me, sort of grinning like it was waiting for me to holler. The metallic sound sounded again, and nothing was there. This was all in maybe 10 seconds of time. I put my head back on Mikkel's arm and asked him, "Did you hear that?" not wanting to scare him or make him think that I was loony. And he says to me in answer, "Did you see the dwarf?" I did not know what to think. As real as they seemed, I was counting on a denial from him to make it all in my head. How could he have seen that too? Ridiculously, I asked him, "Were your eyes open or closed?" He said, "I don't think that was real. His heart was beating very fast. I said, I think we should just close our eyes. It was a mind warp, and felt better to act like all was normal and try to sleep. I was surprised that I was so calm, but sleeping seemed most reasonable. I've always been the type to react or panic a long time after any emergency or danger has passed. We did, sort of jokingly, tell people the next day. They just raised their eyebrows and shrugged. I'm pretty sure they thought we were making it up. Weird as it was, I heard what I heard and saw what I saw. So did Mikkel, but if he wasn't going to bring it up after that, neither was I. We didn't really know what to think. After I moved out of state, we lost touch. I don't usually share this story because it makes no sense and people always act like I'm messing with them. Why would I make myself out to be a dwarf hallucinating lunatic? I have zero explanation for this event, and except for Mikkel seeing it too, don't really have any proof. Honestly, if he hadn't been there and reacted, I would probably hope this was an unusually disturbing and very real half-sleep dream, with sound and line effects. Nothing like this has ever happened to me before or since, but this happened, and I have no idea what it was or what it could be. How could two people hallucinate or project the exact same vision and sound? And why a dwarf? Not like a human with dwarfism, but a fairy tale, gnomey-type dwarf. I'm not saying that dwarves never existed, just questioning the possibility of one glowing in my bedroom in Idaho to be seen by two people. This was 1997 or 98, before laser Christmas and Halloween projectors were available on the home market, and in any case, the room was shut up and dark. The story sounds a bit crazy written down. I can say that, since it is my story, although I have gratefully read one similar experience on YGS from the Middle East, which made me feel much better. Maybe you readers can help me find more similar experiences. I want to share in the name of honesty and exploration, but it is okay if no one else knows what to think of this experience. It is not ghostly or alien, I don't think, just weird as heck. When I think about it, I go back and forth between wanting an explanation and wishing it hadn't happened 20 years ago. Nothing I have researched explains all of it, or the dwarf, or the weird sound. So, I think it's pretty safe to say that that falls under the category of high strangeness, don't you? I've never really read anything quite like that. It's pretty unique as far as the details go of this strange hooded person with a staff, and the long-armed dwarf, or gnome, or troll, or whatever you want to call it. And they did mention that they read a similar experience on YGS, on Your Ghost Stories, but they didn't link or say what that story was, unfortunately, so at this point I'm not sure what that could be. Hopefully I stumble upon it one day. And they didn't really get any comments on their story, so no one seems to have much feedback or explanation for this one. I'm not really sure how much I have either, besides thinking that it's really, really interesting. To me, these just kind of sound like archetypal type figures. The hooded figure, or they had a headband, average human-sized person with a staff, you know, that kind of sounds like a sage or an elder or a wizard or some kind of ascetic or hermit or something like that. And dwarves or trolls, those exist in folklore all over the world, all cultures, throughout time. And these figures, these archetypal figures, have meaning, and they do often go together. You know, you'll see them in fantasy writings, films, games, media. They didn't say anything. They just kind of stared a little menacingly, daringly at the witnesses, almost daring them to call out. And it was over in a flash, and the strange sound, that's a very high strangeness detail as well. I don't know, I guess that signified them kind of entering and exiting this bedroom. Whether it's them entering this plane, this place, I'm not really sure. Definitely let me know your thoughts, and if you've had anything similar, maybe we can get some answers or helpful feedback for Bettina Marie, but I totally understand them being hesitant to share that story, even on a place that's meant for otherworldly experiences. So very grateful that they ultimately felt comfortable and decided to share it, because I think it is very, very interesting. And I do think other people have had experiences that they can relate to when reading this experience. So I believe that will be the only story I have from Your Ghost Stories tonight. Of course, I have many, many others I've read in other videos. My playlist called Ghosts with Goblin is dedicated to videos about stories from that website. Next, we are going to move on to Reddit. First, we're going to visit the Humanoid Encounters subreddit. And this was submitted by NinGen04. And it's called The Elf, the Boogeyman, and the UFO. Was I abducted? I have quite a few rather weird moments from my childhood. I can't remember the order in which they happened, and some of them are hazy and almost dreamlike, but I can say with near certainty that they really happened. The first of these events, if I am to conjure up a chronological order based on guesswork, take place while I was staying in an isolated English farmhouse with my then best friend. I woke up in the middle of the night and found that I couldn't breathe. I've never had an asthma attack before or since, and yet this must be what one would feel like. I tried to scream for help, but couldn't, and so I instead elected to knock over a lamp when I saw my friend's mother walk past in the corridor outside my bedroom. Luckily, she noticed me and convinced my parents to take me to the nearby hospital. My mother took me out to the car while my father stayed in the house to look after my younger brother. Once I was in the car with a blanket over me, my mother left me there so that she could go get changed out of her pajamas and into some clothes appropriate to take me to the hospital. As I sat there in the car, my attention was drawn to an enormous globe of red light on the horizon. It was huge, like the sun, but entirely red. Imagine holding a basketball at arm's length away from your face, and then you'll get an idea of the size of the thing from my perspective. Its light was contained within the circular shape, so it wasn't like it was lighting up the entire sky. This thing moved across the sky from right to left in a smooth, wide arc movement. It went up and then down in about 1 minute, seeming to be very much controlled and methodical. It wasn't a jerky or sudden movement like a meteor or anything. Eventually, I rationalized the event away as having been a hypnagogic hallucination until I asked my dad if he had ever seen a UFO, to which he shockingly replied that he had indeed seen something weird in the sky. As he told his story, he revealed that he had seen a bright red light on the horizon that night while looking after my brother. Eventually, they took me to the hospital, and I remember that the doctor seeing me said that there was nothing medically wrong with me. It was just a weird incident which apparently didn't have a real causation. That morning, I woke up and experienced some sort of weird hallucination. I remember opening my eyes and seeing these colorful floaters around my field of vision, like what you get if you screw your eyes tightly shut. And I briefly caught sight of a spindly hand reaching up from underneath my friend's bed. It looked like a load of fleshy strings all tightly wound around each other to form the shape of a spindly hand with sharp fingers. It was brownish pink in color. I can't remember what happened after that, but I would guess that the hallucination disappeared, and I began my day disturbed. Now here's where things get weirder. I can't remember if these dreams were already a thing in my life before I saw the red sun, or if they started afterwards. Quite frequently, as I was trying to sleep, I would get a very clear image in my head of a bulbous humanoid head looking up from the foot of my bed. I originally thought it was one of Santa's elves, and I would normally see it around Christmas time. It would always give me an intense physical reaction of fear, shivering and screwing my eyes tightly shut to try and banish the thought. To describe the thing, it was a wide-faced entity with enormous eyes with crystal blue irises. It had a wrinkled forehead and a grotesque grin with white, square teeth. It smelled like balloon rubber. I can't remember if there were any ears or a nose. I just remember the eyes and the smile and the shape of the face, which was kind of oval. I remember seeing the eyes slowly blinking, like a puppet or animatronic. The whole creature looked very fake. I can't remember where such a vivid image came from, but I remember it being viscerally disturbing to me. A possible later theory was that my brain lifted the image from an illustration of a gremlin I'd seen in an encyclopedia of folklore. It had a similar kind of smile and face shape, but I have no idea where I got the blue eyes, the blinking, and even the smell of the creature from. I can't find the illustration anywhere nowadays. I got the book from a library in Swansea, Wales. The third and final possibly abduction-related memory I have is the one that's the hardest to nail down. I was staying in a tent with the same friend who I'd been staying with when I saw the red sun. We were telling scary stories about a monster that he insisted existed called the Boomer. This kid was actually really quite influential on me, and I remember attributing a few other weird experiences to this likely fictional critter. But back to the story. So he and I were telling stories. Well, more like he was just terrifying me while I listened in silence, before we eventually decided to get some sleep. I remember waking up and seeing the tent lit up, as if someone was shining a torch through it, or as if there were car headlights directly outside. My friend also woke up to this same sight, and I remember debating with him about whether or not we should leave the tent to see what was causing the disturbance. Being plucky 10-year-olds, we eventually decided to go outside and face down the Boomer. This provided to be something of an anticlimactic adventure, though, as we discovered that it was just his dad driving his tractor. We didn't realize at the time that he didn't own a tractor, but it made sense to us at the time. We went back to bed and eventually forgot about the entire weird event, until recently, when I was trying to remember more about the Boomer and the weird experiences I'd attributed to it. I've tried to assemble my three abduction-related memories into a barely chronological collection of weirdness. These are all just how I remember them. I can guarantee that the Red Sun UFO thing actually happened, and that I was plagued with the image of the elf figure, but the one with the tractor strikes me as the weakest link here. I guess that it is possible that it was a dream. Then again, why would I remember it so much later? Or maybe just caused by his dad getting a tractor from a nearby farmhouse. But the Red Sun UFO and the elf are definitely things that I can't entirely explain. Alright, more high strangeness. They have a few memories that they recall for us here. First of all, the Red Sun. It seems like, as they were saying, everything that they experienced that day are related. They woke up at the beginning of the day and saw a weird... Well, first they saw floaters in their vision, like when you close your eyes very tight and you see that those colored splotches, which I actually used to see all the time in my room as I was falling asleep as a kid. That's something I want to focus on separately in its own video, but I know exactly what they're talking about. And then they saw this really weird spindly hand that was kind of made up of tendons. They said fleshy strings all tightly wound together. I can really picture what they were talking about. It sounds extremely creepy. I do have a particular interest in this type of thing. The disembodied hands reaching up from under beds, through walls, around corners. I have a video where I just read stories about that in particular happening. It's quite common, and also quite strange. So that happened, and later they go and sleep at their friend's house, and wake up kind of in a state of paralysis where they felt they couldn't even breathe, and needed to be taken to the hospital, where they see this weird red sun, which their dad also saw the exact same night. And you, of course, could go with the explanation that they initially went with was that they saw this red sun because they were in this weird, paralyzed, asthmatic fit. But in the end, there was another witness to the UFO. So, explain that. The next one is this weird elf. Or I'm sure a lot of people would kind of think of it as a gray or some sort of alien that they would see at the end of their bed. And the way they described it is seeming kind of fake and having these like heavy animatronic blinks. I was thinking of like a Mac and Me type of creature, you know, this practical effects creature you would see in an old movie. And they said it looked fake, which is very interesting. And I don't point that out to say that it was fake. It just makes you wonder if it was some sort of puppets used by something else. Was this creature that they were seeing, was that just the actual, that's all there was to it? Or was it a puppet or something? Interesting that they even had a smell. It smelled like balloon rubber. And smells are so intrinsically tied to memory. Of course, it had the creepy, grotesque grin, the sneer that also was present in the last story we read. And it's really a shame that they can't remember the Encyclopedia of Folklore, where they saw this gremlin illustration that was similar to the being they saw. I would really love to see that image, and I love an Encyclopedia of Folklore. Then their last story, they said it's the hardest one to nail down, the weakest link. In some ways, it's the strangest because it's seemingly so normal, but so odd at the same time. Their friend's dad driving a tractor, but why would their dad be driving a tractor at night? He doesn't have a tractor, they find out later. If he did, why would he be doing it at night when his son, his 10-year-old son and their friend are camping in the yard? That does not seem safe at all, doesn't seem logical, so bizarre, and I do think it's of relevance that they remembered it and noted it as being a strange and significant experience. And they relate it to being an abduction experience as well. They do see those lights lighting up the inside of their tent as some light being shine in from outside. I can see where they get alien abduction logic from these things. It does sound really similar to what other people report. They invite speculation, so definitely let me know what you think. The next story is also going to be from the Humanoid Encounters subreddit. This one was submitted by Sniggity, who submits a ton of posts to the subreddit. I think they're a moderator, if not even the creator of this subreddit. And they do kind of what I do. They gather stories and reports from a variety of sources and repost them to the Humanoid Encounters subreddit. So, let's read this one that they dug up for us called Glowing Faceless Humanoid. February 3rd, 2015. Midnight. 2 weeks ago, my husband was awakened out of sleep in the early morning hours and saw a small red laser light that traveled across the ceiling and down the northwest corner of the bedroom wall. I reported the incident to the local police department. Our first thought was that someone was playing a prank with either a laser pointer or, worst case scenario, a gun sight. I did, however, have a problem with my husband's laser theory because his bedroom window has heavy bamboo blinds that are pulled more than halfway down. It would be difficult for anything to penetrate the thick bamboo blinds. As far as I was aware, that was the only incident that occurred that night. This morning, he called me into his bedroom and told me that he had seen a being in his bedroom around 6 a.m. He said that it appeared to be self-illuminating, very bright. He said it was about my height, which is approximately 5 foot 5 inches tall, and that it glowed and it had no face. He said its head was a little larger than a human's. He said when he saw it, the being was near the bedroom door. Apparently, when it realized my husband was watching it, the being looked slightly over its shoulder at my husband and very quickly exited the bedroom. He said it had no discernible features and it had no face. It was then he told me that the night that he saw the laser, he'd also seen an approximately 3 foot by 3 foot square shape projected on the mirror of his closet doors. He said that it looked like a large picture frame and that there was a very bright light illuminating from within it, with strange black symbols that resembled hieroglyphics, inside of what he described as small boxes that were also illuminated. He said he's never seen anything like them before. I asked him why he hadn't mentioned this before. He told me that he couldn't understand how there was this large image in his mirror, because there are no windows on the west wall of his bedroom, so it couldn't have been a reflection. He wasn't going to mention it until he saw the being this morning. He told me he's very unnerved about these sightings, since they are becoming repetitive. I'm concerned because my husband is not one to make up stories. He's a very practical, down-to-earth kind of person. If he said he saw something, he did. He wouldn't file this report, however, he did give me permission to file on his behalf, and that he will relate the story if asked about it. I found some pictures on the internet and asked if any were similar to what he saw projected on the mirror. He chose this picture, as it was very close to what he saw. So this was originally posted on the Phantoms and Monsters website in February of 2015, and it was apparently passed along from the MUFON case reports by Albert Rosales, who I'm sure many of you are familiar with, from his books on humanoid encounters. If you're curious about the picture mentioned at the end, so am I. Unfortunately, there wasn't any kind of link or attachments to the actual picture referenced, and this isn't the case just with the Reddit post. It's also not included in the Phantoms and Monsters post, which is a little annoying since it would be nice to see the image that the witness said closely resembled what he saw. What was really strange, what was most strange to me, was the picture, the image they saw in their mirror of a square. Let's see, they described it as it looked like a large picture frame that had a very bright illumination from within it, with strange black symbols that resembled hieroglyphics inside of smaller boxes that are also illuminated. That's a pretty unique detail. I can't say I've heard of anything exactly like that before. Not sure what that could be. Very understanding that the witness was unnerved, especially if this isn't something he's used to seeing. So, although people might not want to report these kind of things because they are so strange and you could be held up to scrutiny from the general public or anyone who hears your story, it is important because maybe you can get some kind of answers, or at least someone who has said, I've experienced that too, or something similar. So in the end, I think it was good that he allowed his wife to file this report. Maybe they got some answers out of it. Although, can't be an exact answer unless that there is some kind of underlying medical cause to it. Anyway, let's read a story, this time from the Paranormal subreddit. And the original poster actually deleted their account, so I'm not sure who posted it exactly, but it's called The Horse That Runs on Two Legs. I grew up in a small town in Oklahoma, about halfway between Tulsa and Oklahoma City. It's on native land. My brother and dad both told me this story at separate times, with no details spared. Their accounts were exact. For context, this happened in the late 90s. We lived in a double-wide trailer. The very back room in said trailer was the den, which both of them used more than the living room. There was a set of double doors that led outside with curtains on them. They were up late one night watching TV when they started to hear a loud thumping sound. We had oil wells surrounding the house, so they assumed it was one of those, until the noise grew louder and louder, until eventually it sounded dangerously close. My dad peeked out of the curtain and saw what he thought was a hoof near the bottom. Confused, he swung the doors open. After all, we didn't have neighbors with horses, or really any livestock for that matter. He looked to the right to see what looks like a giant horse. We're talking over 7 feet tall, running on two legs past my great-grandma's house. We are also native, and my great-grandma claimed to be a white witch, but I believe she was messing with stuff she shouldn't have been, possibly even cursed us, but that's a story for another time. This thing doesn't have antlers, doesn't seem unnatural, aside from the fact that it's massive and is running on two legs. My brother and his friend were driving home about 2 weeks later and saw the same entity run behind their car and hop a fence, taking off into the woods. Fast forward to 2016. My dad has passed away. My best friend, who I've told this story before, and I decided to get spooky, so we take a little trip out to where my house used to be. It's completely dark. We're driving down the road, vibing, listening to music, when, out of nowhere, she gasps. I ask her what's wrong, and she says, "Nothing. I'm just confused. I could have sworn I just saw a giant horse staring at us from the woods. But there's no fence. Why would a horse be in the woods with no fencing? It also seemed way too tall for a horse." I remind her of the story my dad and brother told, and her face turns pale white. At the same time, her radio switches to Bad Omen by Megadeth, despite being in the middle of a totally different song. We panicked and hauled ass back to her house, and I haven't been back down that road at night since. I still have no idea what this thing is. I've asked various people, all of which think it's demonic or bad in some way. It's never hurt us, but it's curious. Our house was surrounded by woods, and you can feel something watching you out there, no matter the time of day. I'm curious as to what you all think it might be. Alright, so I am going to just dive into the comments under the story. There were a lot of comments. Some people do suggest, or at least one person does suggest, a possible natural explanation for seeing a horse be on two legs. Apparently there's some kind of, I don't know, dressage type rodeo entertainment that some people do with horses where they train them or force them to stand or walk on two legs. I'm going to be honest with you, I couldn't even stomach looking into this. Because apparently it's, of course, very painful for a horse and very damaging, so I didn't have any interest in looking into that. I also think that if a horse wasn't explicitly, like, coerced or told to walk on its back legs, I don't think it would. So I don't think you would just see a lone horse doing such a thing. And then also people suggest the usual native creatures, you know, a wendigo, a skinwalker. This person did mention that they are native and they didn't really think it fit either the description or of either of those things. So if you want a clearer picture of what this looked like, this horse running on two legs, someone does ask, I'm curious, by running on two legs, do you mean the horse has four but only uses two, or only has two legs, like a horse ostrich? And the OP replies, it has four legs but only uses two when running. It just runs like a human. My brother said it even hopped the fence like a human would, albeit effortlessly, but it looks straight up like a horse in every way. There were many times we'd be sitting out on the front porch at night and hear something very loudly stomping around the woods, but I never saw anything. I'm almost jealous that I haven't seen it. That reminds me, that's a detail I kind of overlooked myself, is that they said the horse was over 7 feet tall. On two legs, though, so I don't know how tall a horse normally would be if it was on its back legs, but they said it looked like a giant horse. I don't know if that's just because it was standing straight up or because it actually was bigger than an average horse, which, you know, some horses can get pretty big. Some draft horses and such. Here are a couple comments I've compiled from a single user called Four Psychos. They say, I've read several stories on Reddit of these horse humanoids / cryptids, whatever they are, ranging from Midwest, Texas, down to Mexico. Interesting, to say the least. Someone had a Spanish name for it, but I don't remember what they referred to it as. One guy said they saw one at a baseball game in a public restroom. Someone else said they saw a female one in an abandoned house. They saw what looked like a woman in the kitchen with its back turned, and when they turned around, they had the face of a horse. Apparently shortly after, the owner, an old man, came and put the house up for sale, and another story happened in Mexico. I always wish that when people reference other stories, that they were able to provide links to them, but I get it, I gotta cut people some slack. Not everyone keeps meticulous lists on digital documents, like I do, but it would be interesting to read these stories. Just from this vague description, they don't sound exactly like the horse creature in this story. They kind of sound like a humanoid, human/horse being, whereas this was just a horse. It was just running on two legs. Which, speaking of a horse-human hybrid, a creature is referenced in these comments from Filipino folklore called the Tikbalong. And the Tikbalong has a bit of a complex history. So, first let's start with how it relates to the story we just read. So, the most recognized, popular, modern depiction of a Tikbalong nowadays is kind of like a minotaur, but with a horse's head instead of a bull's head. horse head, humanoid body, and horse legs and tail, but a very muscular human torso. That's the most popular depiction of it. Now, if you were to do a search of Tigbilong, that's what you would find, this muscular, beefy horse minotaur thing. But it has a really, really long history. It's up for debate exactly where the creature was introduced into Filipino folklore, because horses were not naturally present in the Philippines before they were introduced through traders and colonizers and that kind of thing. And there's a really, really informational, interesting video about this creature on the Aswang Project's YouTube channel, which I'll have a link to in my source list. But if you just type Tigbilong in YouTube, that's probably the video that'll come up. So it seems like it originally had its roots in pre-colonial Filipino animism as a demon, but it has gone through some shape-shifting over time with cultural influences, such as when Chinese came to do trading and then the Spanish came to colonize the Philippines. So where exactly this most popular modern image came from, it's hard to say exactly. But one theory that the Aswang Project video documentary introduces is that this imagery might have come from ancient Hinduism, because Hayagriva has a horse head. But many Filipino people seem to think that Spanish colonialism had an influence as well. Something that I found very interesting about the Tigbilong is that the stories told regarding this creature bear an immediate resemblance to me to fairy lore. They are said to appear at crossroads, and they're said to be mischievous, and are most well known for leading travelers astray. An enchantment, which, of course, may be broken by turning one's clothes inside out. And this comes up with so many different Western European fairy stories, being pixie-led and turning your clothes inside out to break that enchantment. A reference I found in a story in a book of Filipino folklore, though, did use the word Tigbilong and seemed to attribute it to fairies and possibly being pixie-led. This came from Stories and Legends from Filipino Folklore by Maria Delia Coronel. It basically tells the story of someone being led astray and really starting to see this strange world appear as they traveled further and further into the forest. And it says, he began to suspect that he was just Nati Tigbilong, parentheses, being played with by fairies. So this book uses the word Tigbilong in reference to fairies and even being pixie-led. So I thought that was very interesting. And then a little description of the creature in Philippine folk literature by Damiana L. Eugenio says, the Tigbilong is a kind of monster which looks like a man, having very long feet, so that when he sits on a bench or on his heels, his knees are higher than his head. The Tigbilong can imitate anyone he likes. Sometimes he is visible to man, and sometimes not. His special delight is to lead people to the wrong road. So that reference actually doesn't even mention the horse features at all, but it has more fairy qualities, that sometimes they're visible to man and sometimes not, that they delight leading people astray. And really, that's the main thing that they do, is they just like to lead people off the path into the forest, lead them astray. Also, the Wikipedia page, I know, great reference, right? But the Wikipedia page says that individual Tigbilongs, even today among superstitious Filipinos, are thought to inhabit trees as guardians. So there is another aspect of them that is kind of described as an elemental creature, and inhabiting trees, sometimes depicted as if the very soul of these trees, specifically the balete tree. And balete trees, I've even mentioned in a previous video that they have a special association with fairies. They're kind of the fairy trees of the Philippines. So that's another likeness to fairies. The Wikipedia page goes on, Tigbilong is generally associated with dark, sparsely populated, foliage-overgrown areas, with legends variously identifying their abode as being beneath bridges, which, that's a fairy lore thing, specifically trolls, in bamboo clumps or banana groves, and atop trees, balete trees. So they inhabit the forest. Sometimes they reside in trees. Sometimes they're under bridges. They lead travelers astray, of which you can only break the enchantment by turning your clothes inside out. I just always find it really interesting when there are these qualities and characteristics from one culture that align with another culture across the world. You know, it's just interesting. And I know it's possible that it's been brought over from another culture. I still think it's interesting, but it is still a very, very popular creature in Filipino folklore. And on the Aswang Project website, they have an article about the Tikbalong, and it has some Tikbalong stories that the author of the article shares, one of them, which is from their father. And it's very similar to the Reddit story that we read of the horse running on two legs, because it has to do with hearing these loud thumps outside around the house. I can read it for you, if you like. It says, "I know a couple of people who had Tikbalong stories. One of them is my father. When he was a teenager, he mentioned one particular night when two of his brothers were quarreling and socking each other outside of their hut after a late evening drizzle. You could hear shouts and a dull thud here and there. After some time, their mother broke up the fight and asked them to sleep away their tempers and change their clothes for the night. The two grudgingly obliged. A few hours later, there were dull thuds all over again. This time, however, the sound shifted from one side of the house to the other. My father said the last time he checked, both his elder brothers were asleep, tired from their fisticuffs earlier. Who or what could be making the sound outside? He tried to sneak out of the back door to check, but his mother, who was still awake and sitting near the window, stopped him and told him nonchalantly that he should stay inside as, quote, there's a Tikbalong outside. He obeyed and made sure that everyone was inside at the time. Still, the dull thud, thud, thud continued, one at a time on each side of the house. He was forbidden even to sneak a peek at the window, so he can only imagine what it looked like. Apart from the dull thuds, there was no other sound to hear except the crickets and cicadas. He fell asleep to the sound of the Tikbalong jumping like crazy outside. The next morning, he woke up to find that their neighbors and relatives were all milling around a strange sight. Huge hoof impressions, each the size of a ripe coconut, littered each side of the house. The impressions came in pairs and overlapped each other. Each mark was 7 inches deep and filled with rainwater from last night's drizzle. No one owned a horse in the barrio, and not even a thoroughbred bronco can make impressions that big. It's clearly not a buffalo's, since the hoof is not cloven in the middle. Whatever made those impressions would be immensely bigger and heftier than a horse, judging from the depth and size of the impressions. The fact that the impressions came in pairs suggests a bipedal creature left those marks. Granting that this thing had legs proportionate to a horse, and the torso of a human relative to its legs, could have easily scraped the ceiling at around 10 to 15 feet tall. So that has some similarities to this, to the Reddit story, doesn't it? Tikbalong is a very, very interesting creature. I definitely recommend watching that documentary done by the Aswang Project on YouTube. Really, really informative and well done. Their whole website, their whole thing is pretty great. Worth checking out. So, I think that is where we will leave off for the night. Definitely be back, because there was a couple stories I had that I didn't get to, so definitely be returning to this subject, which I'm happy to. I love high strangeness stories. Just the weirder, the better. More interesting, more mind-boggling. It's just the best. I do have a couple other videos where I read high strangeness stories, so maybe I'll make a playlist. I'll probably just make a playlist now of all the videos I've made regarding high strangeness. Definitely let me know if you've experienced any high strangeness, and if you have any suggestions for topics or formats, please let me know, especially since at the time this is released, it's September now, so we're getting very close to October. If there's anything in particular you want to hear, definitely let me know. I want to make it as fun and spooky as possible. But that will be all for now, so thank you so, so much for joining me and for tuning in tonight. I hope you can have a nice, cozy, strange evening, and I'll see you next time. Good night.